Welcome to All the Bits, a fake radio variety show about board games, the community, and all the lovely, lovely bits. Now it's time to dive into the bits with Sean and Michelle.
Hi.
Welcome to episode 10.
Welcome to episode 10. Wow, we made it to double digits.
We did.
After the last hour, what's been going on, you know, I'm glad that we survived and made it here.
Yes, we've been trying two mics.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't work.
No.
We're back to one mic.
Yeah, because Sean sucks at life.
Apparently.
And is unable to figure out to follow directions on the interwebs.
Yes.
So we're back to one mic and hopefully our sound will be better.
Yes. We'll continue to work on improvement.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're sitting side by side now as opposed to across from each other.
It's very intimate.
It feels super awkward, actually.
Yeah.
I feel very uncomfortable.
It's a little too close for comfort.
I feel soups uncomfortable right now.
Soups, really?
Soups.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. All right. I feel very disoriented.
Speaking of soups, do you know what soups come in?
When do soups come in?
Do you know what soups come in?
What do soups come in?
Tin. And that happens to be...
Our
anniversary material.
Oh, high five. That was really good.
Thanks.
That's a wicked segue and thing. Our anniversary material for the 10th anniversary show episode.
Anniversary. Yeah, we'll go for it.
Yeah. So what would be a good game for 10?
The only one I could pick or think of was Dead of Winter. Because they have the food is in cans.
Yeah, fair
tin
enough.
Tin cans. Can you think of any?
Yeah. I was thinking of this before, actually, on the drive over here. The Godfather. Corleone's Empire. Because you have those little tins that are your briefcases.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's a good call.
Or mint workers or all those various
little
Altoid games.
Yeah, or Ticket to Ride 10th Anniversary Edition.
Yes, because they have mint tins, too.
So there's a good call.
There's quite a few. It's not, we could be literal about an actual tin.
Yeah, we can do whatever we want.
I think I can't remember the name of it, but like the original Sheriff of Nottingham.
Yes.
It has
at Darren's house,
tins.
You saw that. Yeah.
Has little tins. So I don't know the name of it, but.
Looked pretty awesome.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
So that could be an option. So there are lots of options out there.
There are. I'm impressed. Yeah, you went literal. That makes it a lot easier.
So what should people do if they come across a game with tin in it?
They should tweet us at allthebitspod.
Yeah.
Or Instagram us at allthebitspod.
Hit us up on the Insta, as the kids say these days.
Oh, gosh. I don't even think.
Snap word
Insta?
Us.
Yeah.
Snapbook us? Snapchat us? Do we have a Snapchat?
No, I've
That'd
never
be creepy.
Used Snapchat.
You're too old for Snapchat. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
You're way too old for that.
Okay, good.
Once you hit like 18, you should not be using
Snapchat. You should
Snapchat.
Not be using Snapchat.
So all you people out there who listen to us who are using Snapchat, stop it. Because I don't think we have any 18-year-olds listening to us.
Probably
so,
not, no.
You know, that's my take. That's my soapbox for today.
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what's next? I'm so disoriented after everything. What should we talk about next?
Well, I think you should maybe ask me a question.
Oh, yes. I'm supposed to ask you a question. Yeah. That's how this works, right?
Yeah, maybe.
All right. I have a question for you.
Okay.
That's really super important. Have you heard of this whole thing with this like nonsense about making a Catan movie?
Yes.
Okay. So if you could make any board game into a movie, not besides Catan, obviously, because that's coming... What game would it be, and who would you cast in the lead roles?
Oh. Well, first of all, I'm not going to be able to cast anyone because I don't know celebrities.
Well,
for sure it'll have to be Ryan Gosling and Leonardo DiCaprio.
Okay.
And Tina Fey and Amy Poehler.
Okay, and what game would it be?
I don't know. I have two females and two males. Seasons.
Okay.
Yeah.
What would the premise of Seasons, the movie, be?
I believe they're wizards? No. Yeah, wizards fighting in the forest.
Okay.
Yeah, so really good cast. I think I picked a pretty good cast for that. Yeah.
You know, I think you're going to have trouble paying those actors to be in a board game movie.
It'll be a comedy, though.
It would? Okay.
Yeah, sexy comedy. A rom-com, maybe, about wizards. It could work. It could totally work. By the way, that's copyright 2017.
2017, all
the
bits.
All the bits.
Sweet.
No, Michelle.
I don't get credit for that.
You're not getting money from that.
Well, that sucks. I need money to buy more board games.
That's true.
So
you can play my board games. Right. I will allow it.
After you make millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah, off my wizard movie.
All right, fair enough.
All right. I think I have a question for you, but I don't remember what it is.
Okay, so you're going to look at that.
Yeah.
So I'll talk about other movies that I would like to see.
Okay.
This was actually a segment. Wasn't there a segment on...
Yes.
Like Dukes of Dice were doing at some point with like casting movies.
Yeah. On Board Game Breakfast.
Yeah, that's where I ripped it off from, so...
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and I tried to keep it topical. Okay, what's your question?
At least you're honest.
Yeah, oh yeah, totally.
It was very topical. I'm impressed. That was a good question.
Yeah.
You're much better at these than
I wonder who I would cast in my Catan movie.
I'm trying to think of like, who's that old guy with the beard that talks like this?
Sean.
Sean, yeah.
Sean Pearson. Or are you talking about Sean Connery?
Sean Connery!
Sean Connery, yeah, that'd be
Sean
good.
Sean Connery.
I can't think of any German actors.
Yeah.
That'd be a good one for Catan.
That would be.
Yeah, and oh, Lamb Chop could be in it. You know,
from
like This Is the Song That Never Ends. You know,
what show was that from?
Lamb
was
Chop.
That a show or what?
Yeah, it was Lamb
like
Chop.
That Lamb Chop had the Lamb Chop show.
Yeah, famous Lamb Chop could be in it as the sheep.
I like
and,
it.
You know, Babe the Pig could be in it.
Yeah,
and I don't know any famous cows, but. Okay, what's your question? Because this is rambling.
I don't know. I think this is really good fake radio.
Yes. Awesome fake radio.
Okay, well, my question is, what is the weirdest theme for a game that's in your collection? What do you think the weirdest theme is?
You're in my collection.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Look out. Baseball? Football?
Weird? That's weird?
For a board game? I don't know. I'm trying to think. I can't think of weird... I mean, any Euro is a weird theme to me.
Yeah?
Like, theme, I'm using big quotation marks. I don't know. Theme, hey?
Yeah.
Professor Siddle and... no, what is it?
Professor Evil
and the Siddle of Time. It's a pretty weird theme. I mean,
yeah,
you know.
Weird.
I don't know. What about you?
I would pick... For you, I'd pick Sticky Chameleons, because that's just
That's
weird.
A pretty sticky theme.
Although
yeah.
it does make sense.
It totally does.
It is weird.
Yeah.
Weirdest in mine, probably Rococo, just because it's so different.
Yeah, that's pretty weird.
It's not, you know, I guess it would be more, unique.
Yeah.
But
I feel like I don't have any. Like, if I would have that, like, Kama Sutra game from that Bruno Cathala did.
Wait, which one?
The Kama Sutra.
Oh, yeah.
That was like I think it was
right.
Bruno Cathala, right?
Yeah.
It was like a famous board game designer who did it. It's like, that would be a perfect weird thing, but... Don't have it.
I have one called Waggle Dance, which is, I think...
The bee bees, one.
The
yeah,
bees
that's pretty weird.
Is. Yeah, that's kind of strange.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's got super cute bits.
That's true.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to get into more weird themes.
Yeah, maybe we're just not indie enough.
I don't know. We need to get indie enough. More hipster.
Yeah.
If you will.
We need to up our hipster.
Yeah. Speaking of upping our hipster, let's play Guess the Game.
Oh, gosh.
That was an awful...
Yeah, that didn't make
and
sense.
We didn't do
but
our,
I like that you tried.
Do.
Mm-hmm. That's how it goes.
Is that how Jeopardy?
Yeah, that's the theme.
All right. So,
well done.
So yeah, speaking of do. All right, so you're going to try and guess a game from your collection or from just a game in general.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and don't look at my computer.
Okay.
Okay, did you see it?
No.
All right. I'm going to have to be very careful with what kind of themes I give you for this one.
Okay.
Because it's not going to be hard.
Good,
because
right. I'm not good at
so,
this.
So, the publisher is Z-Man Games.
Okay. And by the way, for those listening, try to guess along.
Yeah, guess along with us.
See if you can get it quicker than I can.
Yes.
Which is likely.
Okay. Publisher is Z-Man Games.
Okay. Rouge.
This game came out now in 2015.
Okay.
Its mechanism... I'm going to give you a couple, and later on we'll do more. It's got an action point allowance system.
Okay.
And it's a co-op. The artist is Chris Quillums.
Nope.
What else can I tell you?
Action point allowance, co-op, Z-Man.
Yeah.
Is it Pandemic the Cure?
You know, you're getting closer.
Closer?
Yeah, it's a set collection game that involves hand management. Point-to-point movement is involved.
It's not Pandemic, is it?
Its category is environmental and medical.
What?
Would you like
how's it
the ranking
pandemic?
On Board Game
That geek? One. Okay, sure. Will it give it away?
Number one.
What is number? Oh, Pandemic Legacy Season 1?
Yes.
Yes! Oh, I did it.
Good job. You're awesome.
The never-ending Sean game?
Yes. I played another through July now, so we're getting
nice.
There.
Nice.
We're getting
you
there,
are
man.
Getting there. Maybe one day you'll play Season 2. It's so
I
good.
Told you when Season 4 comes out, that's my goal, to play Season 2.
You'll get through it. We'll get through it. I have all the faith in you.
We will. We will. Yeah. We talked about it. We sat down and we made a plan.
You're still enjoying it?
Last week. Yeah. I mean, for the amount that we're playing it. It was crazy. I think I texted you this, but we've been playing it for over 2 years.
That's insane.
From our first game. And wow. We were like looking over our cards after. We were like, wow.
Yeah, that's crazy. So, I would have a hard time remembering because there's quite a bit of rule changes.
There is. Yeah, thankfully, one of the people we play with, he's very much a rule person, though. So,
okay.
Yeah. While I set up, he goes over the rules and reminds us. And,
okay. And yeah. It works.
So, whatever. We'll get through it eventually.
Cool.
Yeah, so, pew, pew, pew!
Pew, pew!
Pew,
pew, pew, pew, pew, pew, pew,
pew,
pew,
pew, pew, pew. It's time for some drive-bys.
That's over. You can all have a sigh of relief.
Yes, we're finished. So what's your first drive-by, Michelle?
My first drive-by, apparently, is Flip Ships, which we talked about last episode.
We did. We foreshadowed this a little bit.
Yes, and we played it immediately following.
We did. What would your thoughts be on this game?
Well, first I need to tell you who designed it.
That is true. See, I'm still flustered from, like, trying to set this up before.
I understand. So it's Kane Klenko. Is the designer, published by Renegade Game Studios in 2017. Current rating of 7.4, which, I don't know, I find early ratings don't really mean much, but something. Still, so it's still high.
It is very high.
So Flip Ships is a dexterity game with beautiful art, and it's a co-op game, and you have these little discs, cardboard discs, that are the shape of, or the size of a, for all you Canadians, a loonie.
And what about for Americans or people from elsewhere?
I don't know. They'll just have to Google Canadian loony.
Okay. Fair enough.
And there's cards at the far end of the table, if you will. And you need to, you put this disc on a high cylinder and you flick it. And you're trying to... You're trying to hit the ships, have it land on the ships. And there's also, like, a mothership at the very back, which is open. So you can get things inside of it. And then every round, at the end of every round, once everyone takes a turn, the ships attack. So, and you have a life. So, you know, if you lose all your life, you're down. You're done. And I think, what do you have to do? You have to get two discs into the mothership to win.
The mothership?
Yeah.
Or, no, that's it, right? Or
so.
You have to, I feel like there was something else.
Was there? Okay.
Now, in fairness, I don't know how much of this we were actually playing correctly
either. Yeah, we
skimmed
the rules pretty quickly.
We skimmed the rules. We just got to the fun stuff, which is the flicking.
Yes, Yeah, and then there's different ship powers. So, and you upgrade your ships, or not upgrade, but as you lose life, if I recall correctly, as you lose life, you open up bigger and better ships, and then they do different things, like you can shoot adjacent or they can shoot farther and stuff like that. Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Yeah.
It's I'm not really a fan of dexterity games. So it was like a nice experience. I would play it again. I wouldn't seek it out.
Yeah.
I thought that the art was phenomenal.
Yep.
The components were nice.
Yep.
And the gameplay was interesting. Like, if that's your thing, I think it's a great dexterity game. And my favorite part was when you took your first shot. First shot Sean takes, and he lands it in his glass of whiskey. It was pretty impressive.
That was great. I was trying that all along.
And it was a brand new game, too.
Yes, it was a brand new game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was
and a fancy glass of whiskey that Rich was kind enough to give me.
Yeah. Yeah. Terrible
story of my life.
What did you think?
I enjoyed it. I definitely need to play it again. I think I watched like some videos of it after, because like I mentioned, I had just picked it up. So there were definitely were some rules things we got, like the ships. They all get the powers, I think, as you unlock them. At least I bought that from a video. I watched the Game Boy Geeks video on how to play, because I thought I was going to get it to the table again a couple nights ago. There were a couple of other things, so I definitely think, I don't know for like two players how I feel. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like that's the type of game you want a bunch of people around
the table.
Hooting and hollering and stuff as you're going. Like, we had fun with it, and we were kind of just, again, I felt like I personally was just playing around with the flicking, which was fun.
You were much better than I was.
I like most things in life. Well, you know. I really like that they give you the... I don't know what they called it, the control tower or whatever, that you can flick off of instead of a table.
Instead of a table.
I really like that, because not all tables, like you have a nice game mat on your table that goes to the edge, so you can't really get that flick on it, and some tables just aren't conducive to that. So it's nice to have that, that they give you that. I really like the mechanism with when some of the ships give you the powers, the ruler thingy.
Yeah.
The computer, whatever they call it. But it's a thing that lets you get... you know, if you hit something adjacent or hit something that might be a few inches away. So there's a small and a big one for it. So I like that they're definitely making a game of it. Like, I really like when... I don't like pure dexterity. Okay. I like when there's a dexterity component to something that is a game. So this definitely has a game behind it. So I'm definitely looking forward to playing it more.
Yeah. And there are certainly, like, some interesting decisions. Yeah. Like, you wanted certain ships... You wanted to kill certain ships first, because you had to look like the ships moved and came and attacked you. So which one should we get? Like, there was enough game there to make it interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's definitely, I'm glad I have it. I'll play it a few more times and then decide what's going to happen with it. But I don't have anything like that in my collection. Yeah. So it's a nice thing. And it's a purely co-op, which is cool too, which I really like actually.
Yeah, that is nice. That. So. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yep.
Cool. What's yours?
So I'm going to try and talk about my first drive-by. We'll see, because I am still flustered. And I feel like I definitely need to play this game more to actually give a proper opinion about it. But it's Lisboa from EGG Games, or Eagle Griffin Games, so it's EGG, and Vital Lacerda?
Yeah.
Okay, sweet, nailed it. 2017, and it's 8.3 on thing. And I feel like just this one, it's the weight of it is 4.42 out of 5.
Wow.
Which is significantly out of my wheelhouse for games. Not that I don't generally like games that are heavy like this. It's more that I just don't have the people to play this type of game with. Yeah. I do enjoy them, and when I'm in the mood for it, and I love this game, I want to play it again very badly. I just, like, it's not a game I would ever own, because I wouldn't get to the table enough to justify it.
Yeah, and those... His games are expensive.
They are expensive, too.
Substantial packages.
It is a big box.
Yeah.
And this is just the retail edition. It was a huge box. So Lisboa is a city building, area control. There's everything going on in it. You have tile placement. There's a little drafting mechanism going on in it. There's just a whole bunch of stuff. At its heart, I think it really is. You're just kind of, you're rebuilding. It's a city building game. You're trying to rebuild Lisboa after the earthquakes and tsunamis, I think. There's an earthquake and tsunamis, and then they had fires and stuff. And it's really, again, for this type of game, you usually don't have a game like this that's got tons of theme, but this game is just dripping with theme as far as I'm concerned. I think part of it is Lacerda is from Lisboa, at least from what I understand. So there is so much stuff in, like, the book, the rule book, all sorts of other things has, like, text and whatnot about actual people and things going on.
Cool.
So it's definitely a passion project, I think, for him.
Yeah.
So that it really does feel really... like there's something going on here, and you're trying to basically rebuild Lisboa.
Okay.
And you're doing this by building businesses, and you get points, which are wigs. your points are wigs. For building businesses, primarily, that's how you're getting your points. And you're doing basically your different actions that you're doing is you're going to three dudes. There's a king. And two other guys, governor, and there's three guys that let you do different things.
Okay.
And you're going to these people to kind of get your actions to decide what you're going to do. Like I said, the primary action that you're doing is you're building public businesses, and then kind of like these, I forgot the name offhand, but they're these overarching businesses, and they're the ones that dictate what scores. So you have basically a map of downtown Lisboa, and each block is like a different color. And that color is what potentially will score depending on what your kind of overarching business is okay. that you lay. And you lay that tile by going to the king and then putting that tile down. And that tile might say gold and purple are what score for this block.
Okay.
While in a different game, you could put a tile down that says blue is what scores for this
right,
block.
Right, okay.
Like that. So, and it's funny, when I was playing this game, I was like super overwhelmed, obviously.
Yeah.
But the book is really good. So there's the rule book, this gigantic rule book. Mm-hmm. But then everyone has a player aid, which is also a form of a rule book.
Oh, really?
But wow. It is really super helpful. And what I really like about it is he gives you kind of tips and tricks of how to play the game. So first thing I noticed was that if you get those overarching businesses, you control the scoring of the game. No one else who was playing, the other three guys, didn't notice what that. They said in the books. So I was, I'm just going to focus my early thing about putting those buildings down, those overarching buildings that are completely different than the stores that people put down, which means they won't score. So that was really nice. And I don't think anyone picked up on that until like the second round of the game.
Okay.
So which let me kind of control the scoring a little bit, which in the end I landed up winning by like a couple of points. But so that's a really neat mechanism. The other thing you're really doing is, that I really like is there's a shipping aspect too, and there's a producing aspect. So all your stores that you build in downtown Lisboa will produce at some point. There's an action that you can take to make them produce. So you get your goods like that, and you can ship, other people. If you build a ship, other people can ship on yours, which gives you money, and there's tons going on.
Yeah.
This is a game I will talk about again, hopefully in a drive-by. But I definitely really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was definitely a fun experience. I think I mentioned to you, I had played the Galleries before, and it was an awful experience that I hated. I didn't like it at all. It was partially because it was a really bad teaching experience. With this one, everyone had just kind of like watched the video and read the books, and we all went into it new. There's a good chance we probably messed up some rules.
Sure.
Like, we talked about it after, but everyone had a really good time with it, and there are so many decisions and so much to think about as you're playing. And we were all like, after the game, I think we were talking for like a half hour, 45 minutes about things that we did. And it wasn't bad. Like, it took maybe with the learning, like a bit over 3 hours.
Yeah, that's really good. I was surprised, which didn't
seem that bad.
No, that's not bad.
So, definitely, cool. I definitely want to play this again. I love the fact that it's fixed and that there's this number of rounds.
Because
you're drawing from a deck of cards that you either do, that you use for your placement. So, again, they're kind of your workers. And it's fixed. So, you have a couple different rounds that you go through and your deck is fixed. So, there's no taking X amount of time.
Right,
for it.
Right.
It's a fixing. Okay. So I really like that. And like I said, I really like that you're competing for wigs, which is really cool.
That's fun.
It's definitely a game I want to play again.
It's beautiful,
too. It is really gorgeous.
I've only seen photos, but I think it looks stunning.
The artist is Ian O'Toole.
Okay.
So I didn't mention him, but yeah, it is really nice.
Yeah, beautiful.
And again, like I said, you can really tell it was a passion project.
Mm.
It doesn't feel like so many of these, heavy Euros. There's just something is slapped on it.
Right.
Like, it doesn't feel like that.
No.
So it appeals to someone like me who's not really into that dry, boring Euro.
I found Galerist very thematic as well.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, I really did.
Which is why I wanted to play it.
Yeah. I liked Galerist, but like, I had the same thing. Like, I bought it and then sold it
because
I really enjoyed it. But I was like, I don't want to teach this to anyone.
Yeah. And this, I think from what I was reading online and some of the guys who had played the Galleries were like, this seems a little bit more streamlined and easier to kind of go over.
Okay.
Even though I think it helps. One of the guys was saying he's played the Galleries a few times and he said some of the mechanisms are very similar.
Oh,
they're just
really?
Different names.
Okay.
For them, so he said that really helped with it too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely looking forward to playing this again and talking about it with a more comprehensive drive-by. Just because, again, there was a ton going on, and I played it like probably 2 weeks ago, and honestly, there was so much going on that I'm like, whoosh, forgot. And unfortunately, I'm not professional enough to take notes and do stuff like that. Which, it would be an awesome podcast if I did that.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. So, but, right now we're just...
Randos.
Randos.
Random thoughts.
Speaking of random thoughts, what's your next game?
trying so hard.
I know, I tried way too hard. What's your next drive-by?
Speaking of a lot of things going on, I played a Feld.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
Oracle Delphi,
mm-hmm.
Stefan Feld,
mm-hmm.
Tasty Minstrel Games,
mm-hmm.
2016.
Mm-hmm.
Current rating of 7.4, which surprised me. Because
that seems high.
And there's like enough ratings there that it's like, you know, it's a 7.4. But I thought, I haven't heard a lot of good things about this game, so I thought it would be lower. What mm-hmm. it essentially is a racing game.
Mm-hmm.
You're given a ship, mm-hmm. and there are map tiles out, and you're given 12 objective tiles. And some of them are things like, put a statue of this color on an island, and you have to find an island that allows you to put a statue of that color.
Okay.
Or put a cube on this temple, but it has to be like, so you go somewhere and pick up a pink cube, and then you deliver the pink cube to the pink temple, so it all matches. And then there's fighting monsters and things like that. What you have are three dice, so it's filled with dice, which makes me happy, and it's custom dice. And you roll your dice, and then that dictates what actions you can take. So very typical, and it's pretty much color matching. So like a red die allows you to move your ship to a red hex, or to pick up a red cube, or pick up a red statue. Like it's actually very straightforward. And then of course there's modifiers for the dice so that you can mitigate your rolls. There's gods that you can move up on a track and get special actions anytime. There's modifiers to your ship. Some people, like I was allowed to manipulate my dice clockwise and counterclockwise in this rondel. I don't know, that's a rondel really. It's just a circle with all the dice. And I also had more slots to carry things in my ship, you know, so that sort of thing. Like a very typical Feld. And then as you complete objectives, you get to take additional actions and you get to take additional modifiers. Also typical to Feld, there's a game piece. It's the Titan die. You roll at the end of every round, you roll a die. And if it's a six, you take two injury cards. If it's something else, you compare it to your shield strength. And if you're not matching it or higher, you take an injury. And then if you get too many injuries, you lose a turn, which is pretty significant because what I've experienced and what I've also heard other people experience is it's always down to like the last turn. So mm-hmm. if you lose a turn, it really screws you. So again, it's like the rats in Notre Dame, and you know what I mean? Like it's very Feldy in that way.
Love the rats in Notre Dame.
Yeah, it's a great favorite. That's part a great game, actually. Yeah. I'd like to play that again, speaking of. Anyway. And then so what you have to do is finish these 12 objectives and then take your ship to the middle Zeus,
mm-hmm.
and then the game is over. And I've played this a few times now, and it was like okay to me, and then this last play I loved. I just had so much fun with it. I love Feld. I just do everything about it. The dice, it's a fun mechanism. I like rolling dice. I found it very easy in the sense of it was straightforward what the dice could do.
Mm-hmm.
Pink, okay. You can do all the pink things, you know, red. Yeah. You can do all the red things, that sort of thing. So it's fairly straightforward in that way. And that was just a matter of efficiency,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting. What I don't really like is this fighting monsters. So you actually use dice and you have shields, but your shields are super low and the strength of the monsters are like 9 when they start. And there's not a lot of ways to increase your shield's strength. Huh. I don't know, it just kind of felt weird. It just, that part of it almost felt tacked on. Like, he was like, oh, I can do a Ameritrack or something. I don't know. It was kind of strange.
Yeah.
But it still worked out, and it's a great little game. Like, I'm surprised it doesn't get a little bit more love than it does. It's very different than Feld, though, mm-hmm. in the sense that it has no points. Like mm-hmm. Feld's known for point salads, yeah. right? There's not a point. It's you race to the finish, you complete your objectives.
Huh.
Yeah, but it's a good game. Yeah, if you like Feld, I would recommend it.
So you would recommend if you like Feld?
Absolutely. I really enjoyed my last play. I'm itching to play again.
Okay.
Yeah. Really cool. Enjoyed it.
Neat. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember you saying that you really didn't like it at first. Or you
it wasn't
were
that I
issue.
Really didn't like
well,
it.
Well, you like,
just,
you'll
it
eventually
felt kind
like.
Kind of flat. Like, I was like, okay. Like,
you'll eventually like everything. Even Unearthed, I don't know. You would probably like. You should buy Unearthed. I should buy you Unearthed for Christmas and then see how long it takes you to like it.
Yeah. I don't know. There are games that I play more and like less. Like Colony.
Oh, yeah. You were really into getting that. Did you sell that? You got rid of that, didn't you?
I'm trying to sell it. Nobody wants it. But yeah, it's definitely the more I play it, the more I like it. And I just, I mean, you know, sometimes you just have a great gaming experience. You know, I just had a lot of fun with it.
Because you haven't played it with me.
That's true.
I would have ruined the whole thing.
Yeah, you would have been like, oh, I suck at life.
Yeah, and spilled coffee or scotch or beer all over it. That's true. Yeah.
That's true.
True story.
If it makes you feel any better, Rich spilled water on my Bruges expansion.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But it's okay. It's okay.
It survived.
Yeah.
It's just water.
I cuddled it. I took it to bed. I sang it lullabies. It's okay.
All right. I'm just going to go on to my next drive-by.
Yeah, that sounds great.
This is, we're really doing things nicely on our 10th episode.
That's right.
Yeah. It's okay. We're saving a real celebration, I think, should be for our 12th.
Why?
I don't know.
You like the number 12?
No, I'm just trying to do math in my head, but failing.
Okay.
What's 52 divided by?
Oh, gosh.
By 4. 14?
I don't know.
No, 13. 13 should be our big celebration, because that means we're a quarter to the way of... No, yes, 13 should be our big celebration, because that would mean we're like halfway to a year.
Sure, but it's also like 13 is a bad luck number.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's true, it is, isn't it? Yeah. All right, Mike, speaking of 13... No, I should have said 5. Darn it. My next drive-by is Cinque Terre, the Five Villages. And this is designed by Chris Handy of Paco Games fame.
I couldn't remember where to recognize his name from.
From Rio Grande Games. This was in 2013, and it's right now 7.1 on BGG. So I've talked about this game, I think, at the beginning of when we first started with this, how this was a game that I was enamored with for no other reason than I've been to Cinque Terre, to the Five Villages, and it's like such an absolutely beautiful game, place. Such a beautiful place, region. And I feel like the game, and I played this game shortly before I went there, and I feel like the game is just so vibrant. There's so many colors in it. It really captures captures something about Cinque Terre.
Okay.
Something. Captures something. And basically what this is a pick-up and deliver game. I think the easiest way, really, it's Ticket to Ride without trains, which is great, because that's what I don't like about Ticket to Ride. Not a huge train fan of Ticket to Ride. But it's what you're doing is you're... you're farming and harvesting different goods. So there are 8 different goods, I think. You're harvesting things like olives and tomatoes and oranges and grapes and things like that from the region. You're harvesting them, then you're going to the 5 different villages and you're selling them. What's neat about it is it's kind of random what each good is worth, because at the beginning of the game, there's a bag. You have 16 die, 2 of each color, I think. And you go into it and you roll them and then place them at each of the villages.
Okay.
So it changes each game what each one is worth. So that's how you get points. You also get points by fulfilling contracts. And it's just what you're going to sell at various villages.
Okay.
So one card might say you'll get 10 points if you sell a zucchini to Rigamori, and I think it's Rigamori, and something, and a garlic at Vernazza. See how I know the names and everything,
yeah,
right?
Wow.
It's super profesh. But you, you earn points like that. And then whenever you sell the cubes or you sell the goods, you put them on your little player board.
Mm-hmm.
And the first person to, let's say, fill up, and I can't remember if it's like 10, I think there's 10 spaces. First person to fill up at the end of each village, so to get like 10, gets the most valuable vendor. So okay. That's an extra bonus point, like 10 or 12 or 8, depending what it is, you'll get for finishing that village, for selling most of the village. And another mechanism that I actually like about this game is you can only ever go clockwise. So during your turn, you can pick up cards, which let you harvest when you go into the farm. You can also move. But when you move, it always has to be clockwise.
Okay.
So you can't go back. You always, like, if you want to go to the village the previous village, you have to go all the way around the board again. And you can move up to 4 on each action. So that's a neat little thing. And it comes with these cool little cars. I don't know if you've seen the cars for it. They're like little moped thingies, which are pretty neat. You can actually keep the cubes for the goods on the cars, but they fall over. So I think the book says to just put them on your player board. But yeah, I was so, like, I played this game 3 times in 2 days. I borrowed it, twice at 2 players and once at 4 players. It is definitely a much better experience at 2 players. Yeah, definitely at 2. I think even on BGG, they say it plays best at 2. It's like a pick-up and deliver game that actually works really well at for 2 players, which is cool.
Yeah, it says best at 2.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's Cinque Terre, the 5 villages. I'm very excited to borrow a copy and be able to play it. And I'll probably play it a bunch more until there's a little cars.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, it's definitely a fun game. I really...
Light. Oh, they're so cute.
Yeah, they're like super cute.
Aww.
Yeah.
I like that.
So that was my moped drive-by of Cinque Terre.
Nice. Well done.
What is your final drive-by?
My final drive-by is London, the second edition.
Mm-hmm.
Designed by Martin Wallace. And I don't know, actually, can you look that up? The original London?
Mm-hmm.
This second edition is published by Osprey Games and just came out in 2017 and has a current rating of 8 on BGG.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I don't know how to describe it, kind of a tableau builder, engine builder game where you're placing cards in front of you to eventually run the cards in front of you and do the actions, and they require cards and money to be able to play and to activate. And you're really just trying to get the most points, be the most efficient. You can buy boroughs, which is land, and they give you additional cards, which is good because, you know, you need cards to be able to do things. And they give you points as well. And some cards will say, like, you know, gain $2 for every borough you have, for example, right? So they're good to collect for that. And then there's poverty, which is a really interesting mechanism in that when you run your city, you collect poverty based on, you get 1 poverty for every stack you have in front of you. So you're allowed to have as many cards in your tableau as you want. But when you run your city, you gain a poverty for every stack you have in front of you, regardless of whether or not you used that stack when you ran your city. And you also get a poverty for every card in your hands. So you can't just have a ton of cards and then run your engine and then have a ton of cards. Like, you really need to try to be efficient. But the way the poverty works at the end of the game is, it's not like there's a table will say, like, if you have 4 poverty, you lose 7 points or whatever, right? But instead of it being how much poverty you have, it's actually whoever has the most poverty that you count up your points. So let's say the person with the most poverty has 10. And the next person has 5, or the lowest person has 5, then the difference is 5. So he only, the loser only gets for 5 poverty. Yeah, loses points for 5 poverty. So that's kind of neat because you can kind of gauge how the rest of the table, how much poverty the rest of the table has, and decide how much you want to push your luck with that, right? Or luck, but push it with that. The other neat mechanism is that the cards flip. So most of the cards that you put in your tableau in front of you are only one-time use, and you have to flip them. Of course, there are some cards that don't require that. So as you're building your tableau, when you run your city, you're going to be flipping most of your cards face down, and then you're building on top of them again. And any card you play, you build in your tableau, you get to get points for at the end of the game. So some of them are straight up, like, even when you run your city, they give you nothing at all, but they're worth points.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the game. It lasts until the cards go through. There's like an A deck, a B deck, a C deck. So the game has a nice sense of progression. And yeah, the second edition, I've played the first edition. I borrowed it a month or two ago and played a few games. And now I've played a few games of the second edition. Significant differences.
Okay.
In that the first edition actually has a map that you build your boroughs in. And you actually have, like, buildings that you put out. And there's, like, an underground where you have to build adjacent undergrounds. And they give you additional points. The second edition did away with that completely. And they just have these large borough cards that you buy instead. So I haven't played either version to really understand the implications of that change. I do know most people who love the first edition are actually happy with the changes. Okay. So that's interesting, because that's a pretty significant change to take away a board. And I know it is a well-loved game, so so that's good. It's an interesting game. I'm kind of like, I want to play it more. You know, it's like, it's good. I'm enjoying it. Every time I play it, I like a little bit more. It's interesting, but it feels slightly repetitive, because you're just kind of, you know, on your turn, it's like, okay, you take a card, and then you either build your city, run your city, take three cards, or buy a borough. Mm. So it's very, like, repetitive. You build, you run. You build, you run. You build, you run. I have a feeling I've only played it two players, and the timing of the game is just get through the deck, right? So with two players, that takes longer. So maybe the pace would feel a little bit better at three or four players.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a good game. It's fun. It's interesting. I really like the poverty mechanism. I think that's pretty neat. Gives some interaction and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And the production is phenomenal. Mm-hmm.
It looks like it.
I love, love, love the look of it. I know some people find it a bit stark and boring, but I think it's absolutely gorgeous.
Too easy. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah. It's just stunning. Nice. Even
the box. I'm looking at your box right now. It's very classy.
It's beautiful. The art is amazing.
It looks like a puzzle box.
Sorry. It does. And it opens like a book.
Oh, does it? Cool.
Yeah. I think, I don't know if all Osprey games do that, but Lost Expedition and London both open like a book. And they have a gorgeous insert. The quality of the cards is great. The art is just so, 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 so good. And the rule book is gorgeous as well. Really well laid out. Just good attention to detail.
Nice.
Yeah. That's sweet. London.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. How are we going to segue into this next one? Wow. That was worse. You're getting worse, I think, as we go through the episode.
I'm going to talk about Antidote.
Okay. Sounds good.
That'd be good if we did Pandemic Legacy and then.
Oh, yeah.
Went into this. So, Antidote is a card game from Bellwether Games and designed by Dennis Hoyle. Came out in 2013, and right now has a 6.4 rating on BGG. Have you ever played this?
No. I remember when it came out, though, and I watched a review, and it didn't look that good.
So I played this the other night with a few friends I went to a game night who aren't necessarily, gamers. You know, crazy like me. They're gamers, but they're not like us.
Okay, yeah.
Right? They don't listen to podcasts, record podcasts. Buy all the games, put their children in game boxes to drag around the house. They don't necessarily do things like that, Michelle. But, so Antidote is a, I guess you would call it a deduction game. And what you're trying to do is each game there is eight different diseases. They're colors, basically.
Yeah.
There's eight different colors. One to three, and then there's the X ones, which are the vials breaking. So one of those is hidden under the box at the beginning of the game, and you have to do a number of actions to try and deduce what that is.
Okay.
So which is the one you're trying to cure? And the way it works is there are a few different actions in the game. There's one where you can say everyone discards a card. So you say everyone discards a card, and everyone discards a card face up. To do it. There's another action that's everyone passes to the left or the right. And then there's the syringe, which lets you take someone else's card into your hand. Basically, you're doing all this stuff until you run out of cards, until everyone has one card left. And what you're trying to do is that your one card left is the matching color to the X card underneath. So okay. The same color. So you're trying to kind of get as much information as you can doing that. Obviously, anytime you have an X card, you know that's not the disease. That's not the one because you have the X card. So you're trying to kind of manipulate things to make sure you can get as much information as possible. And then at the end of the game, everyone flips over their card and then takes the card under the thing and sees if anyone had it. That's pretty much the game.
Okay.
It plays pretty quickly. Like we were only playing three. I think it's definitely a game you need like five or six. I think it plays seven or eight. I think things would be a little bit I think more fun. I don't want to say more fun, but a little bit more interactive with more people, right? With three, because you could do lots of different things with three, and you can, there's a lot. I think it would be easier to get more information. I think with the three, it's a little bit harder to get information. Okay. It was definitely a fun game, though. I'm actually considering ordering it because it plays fast, and it's a game you could definitely be like, I could bring for lunch and play in 20 minutes or 30 minutes at lunchtime. And you can play with, you know, 5, 6, 7 people. So I don't think I would play with 7, actually. I think that would be too crazy. 4 or 5. It would be, I think, really fun to play with. But I enjoyed it. I mean, I like games like that. It's not like I know we've played like Sleuth and like games like that where it's like pure deduction. There's not a ton going on in this game, but it is a pretty light game. And it's definitely, again, something I don't necessarily have in my collection. And it's like, I think a $12 to $15 game. So it's not particularly expensive. I know there was a Kickstarter for, I didn't kind of look into it to see what's in it, but there was a Kickstarter for an expansion last year for it that seemed to do well. So it's definitely a fun game to play. And I think it's a good lunchtime game.
Yeah. Interesting.
Antidote by Bellwether Games. I don't know if I have anything.
When was that?
2013.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think I have anything else to say about it. But, I liked it. It was, like, for a game I never heard of it before playing it. And it was simple and straightforward. Like, it takes a couple turns to kind of get what's going on and what you're trying to do. But it's definitely a fun experience. So
deduction is always fun. Yes. I really like deduction
games. I like deduction games, and I do like fast deduction games.
Is that a fact?
Yes.
Is that a truth?
Is that why? What's going on here? Because you're deducting?
No, because I'm segueing.
Oh, you're segueing to game. Oh, very good. But first we have to do our sound effect.
Oh.
For this.
Okay.
Okay.
This is our BGG thread spotlight.
What gaming truths have you learned?
Yes.
That was good.
See?
I didn't pick up on that.
No,
see,
you didn't.
You're going one way. I'm going the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Episode 10,
Yeah,
we're noobs.
Yeah, we have a long way to go.
Yeah.
We're going to go a long way. Are you going to kick things off?
Sure. Okay. Do you want to explain what we're doing first?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
What this
is? I'm still overwhelmed. I'm still, yes. Yes, Michelle, what is our BGG Thread Spotlight?
Oh, so I have to explain it.
Yeah, you have to explain it.
Oh, I see how this goes. Our BGG Thread Spotlight is exactly what it sounds like. It's a BGG Thread Spotlight where we find a thread that we think is interesting or funny, and we pick a few of our favorite posts and then discuss our thoughts.
Yes,
that is the truth.
That was the truth. Very good.
And the reason we keep bringing up the truth is because the thread today is, what gaming truths have you learned? Sean,
yes.
Would you like to share what the original poster?
Sure. Let me say what Scott McKay said.
Okay.
One, if you're winning, faring well, keep doing what you're doing. If you're losing, change it up and take bigger risks. Two, if more than one person is using a particular strategy, go with a different strategy. Do what nobody else is doing. Three, don't spend too long building an engine infrastructure before employing it. The small engine used well beats a huge engine that runs out of time. E.g. viticulture. 4.
I love that you know that difference.
That's
so refreshing.
At work, I have to read other people's reports and correct them on that
very
frequently.
Very few people know that. I appreciate
4.
That from you.
Look for net gain, not total gain that also helps the leader. Sure, Scott.
Yep, yes, that was a lot.
That's a lot, man.
But it's good.
But it's good. It gets us going for this.
Yes. So Mike Cooper says, if you're asking whose turn it is yours.
Yeah. Willie the Snitch, who has made previous appearances on the Board Game Spotlight, on the BGG Spotlight, says, don't whine and complain about how terrible things are going for you during the game. You end up looking like a jerk if you end up winning the game.
So true.
I've played with so many people who do that.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts.
Chris Whetstone says, a crushing loss in a fun, interactive game is more fun, memorable, and satisfying than a huge win in a serious game lacking interaction every single time. And I totally disagree.
Oh, really?
Well,
you disagree? As someone who experiences crushing losses on a regular basis, I would much rather have a crushing loss in an interactive game.
I don't care about interaction, is my point.
That's true.
Yeah, I don't care. I'm okay with that.
All right. Pete, who's making another appearance. Yes. My favorite BGG poster.
Me too.
Most games are decided by the attractive move you don't take and not by the attractive move that you do take. Pete resists the urge to do stuff that doesn't make him win. Yep.
It's true. Yep. It's like, ooh, squirrel. Yep. Ooh, shiny object. Yep. Yeah. I have a hard time with that. This might be my favorite BGG name.
I just knows it now.
Bodie McBoatface.
Yeah.
Says, no food at the gaming table.
Yeah. Or, we'll get into that later.
We'll get into that later.
Zenith Splendor. That's his real name, or her real name. A year from now, what I will remember is the fun I had with my friends, not if I won or lost.
Yes. Oh, that's a good true. One. True, true.
Yeah.
Giraffe, solo games have 100% player interaction.
You know, that's a good point. Yeah. Kelly Bass, I would rather play a great game for the ninth time than a new-to-me average game once.
Yeah. No.
I would rather play a great game for the ninth time.
Not at ninth. Nth. So, like...
Oh, what does that mean?
It means, like, a lot of times.
Oh.
So she'd rather play a great game a bunch of times...
Than a new...
Than oh, play you, a new you, new mediocre
game. You wouldn't want to do that? You just no, want to I play love... All, you want to play all the games.
Well, I guess I'm called to the new... I love... new experiences and trying new games and seeing new ideas and so
I got it. I didn't know what nth means.
Nth degree. Whatever. You know, have you ever heard that, like, to the nth degree?
Yes, I have, Nelly, but just in writing I just it's I topped down and I was like, this is ninth.
I had a brain like halt when I first saw it.
All right, fair enough.
All right, Plaid Dragon says,
awesome name too, by the way.
Yes.
Okay.
Dice hate me.
Yeah, I'm
that's
sure they
his, that's his truth
or they hate
truth.
everyone I think
it's true.
Eva says, try before you buy.
Mm-hmm. I could see that. Mm-hmm. Big Sean.
Yeah.
Except it's not you.
No, it's not me. Spelled the wrong way.
That's right. Even CN. I knew that now.
CN. Okay.
Big boxes with lots of components don't always mean good games. You can't polish a turd. That was my favorite.
I disagree with him, because check Kickstarter, man.
Yeah, well, that's true. But how many people get caught up in the polish, then they play the
that
game?
That is true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nick Kemi, the really good games are rarely the ones in the daily deals and clearance sales. Yeah.
I had to learn that. Obviously. It's like, oh, it's only $10. And then it's like, and then you learn, oh, this is taking up shelf space I'd rather have for.
However, well, that's not necessarily. It is true, but if you wait long enough, I mean, you know, I think Pandemic Legacy is my favorite example. There was a time when it hit like $30 and you could pick it up.
Like, in Canada?
Yeah, it's like 40, but it's definitely $39.99.
Really?
Yeah. But, I mean, especially... we don't count for this.
That's true.
But in the States, like, you know, if you get to a point that everyone has the game, you wait long enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that is a good point.
Yeah. Still, like, when there's a big sale, usually it's,
no, it's gonna be
mediocre.
What, yeah, I mean, that's like everything. Yeah. Like, things that you don't want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So sad.
All right, so what's your gaming truth?
Michelle. I picked a few.
Well, you did, so did I, yeah.
Yeah, so the one I've learned very recently is just to not give Sean a glass of anything at the table. You've spilt 2 or 3 times at my house, broken a glass, flicked a thing in the scotch, spilt on Sagrada.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I could tell you more stories.
Yeah, I
tell
you
my
you
story
can.
At Gen Con, spilling beer all over... a brand new prize copy of Ex Libris.
No.
That happened.
Oh, no. Yeah. Was it your copy?
No.
Oh, no.
So,
yeah, Sean's a bit of a klutz.
Yeah, so that's good you learned that.
Yeah, so I've offered him a sippy cup in either Dora or Thomas, and you picked Thomas. Mm-hmm. I thought you didn't like trains.
Thomas is okay.
All right.
I don't like Dora. Dora's annoying.
Okay.
It's just Boots pisses me off. Anyway, go. Just go. Let's go. Let's do this.
Okay. That's the first thing is just don't give Sean anything.
Yeah.
This one I learned. Learning games at the table is a poor use of gaming time. When I first got into the hobby, I was like, what's the big deal? Because everyone was like, learn beforehand. And now I'm do not like learning games. I don't mind like reviewing rules.
Yeah.
You know, but to sit down and like crack open a game for the first time, no thank you. Better use of gaming time than that.
Yeah.
And then this one, we kind of already talked about this, but when a reviewer says there's lack of interaction, it's probably for me. Nice. Yeah, that's probably something I'll like.
Awesome.
Yes, what are yours?
So when I first started playing, I used to get so pissed off when people would be on their phones during a game.
Okay.
And it used to drive me crazy. And then I got a pregnant wife and had a child, and it was like, this is probably, you know, this game that you're playing is probably the least important thing going on in your life right now. So I was like, everyone has phones, so there's nothing wrong with it.
Okay.
You know? And then I do kind of have in brackets, maybe not during the rules explanations, you know, right. if it's a game you don't know and someone's taking the time to teach you and the effort, it's kind of rude to do that.
Or if you're doing it, like, at all times when it's not your turn and then you put your phone down and you go,
what's happening?
What happened? What did you do? Yes. Or something like that.
Yeah. So that's definitely something. Try before you buy, I totally agree with. I try and do that as much as possible. I was doing it really good for a while, then I fell down the rabbit hole. I think around Gen Con. That's what happens when you go to Gen Con.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I haven't really recovered since. But definitely try before you buy. And then guiding new players and being kind to new players and kind to, you know, people, again, who might not be as into the hobby as you are, or just people who might be just taken aback by a game. You know, who might just be like, oh my god, this is so complicated, and this is so, like, really taking the time and not getting frustrated and not getting that this is part of our hobby, is trying to get other people in. And right. I think it's really important to kind of handhold when you have to handhold these people. It's really important to not, I am a firm believer, and I know a lot of people don't necessarily believe this, but when you're playing with people who are new and you're really good at a game, you know, not necessarily going out there and whopping them, you know, even if it means you doing stuff you would never do just to keep the score even. And
right.
it means throwing a game or whatever to give that person a good experience.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, that's a big part of this
for
hobby.
Sure. So. I actually find it harder to do now in a sense because I've almost lost sense of what people don't know. Like, I talk board games, I think board games, and I've been doing it for so many years now that I forget, like, that the concept of deck building is, like, crazy to someone who's never played a game.
Yeah.
So, whereas I used to teach games and be very, like, methodical with my rules, now I just find that I skip over so much because it's like, oh, you know, it's a da-da-da. Like, and you kind of forget.
And
you know, what it's like to think like someone who
doesn't normal.
Yeah, well, no, but who doesn't play board games a lot, you know? It's like you kind of have to, like, okay, really, for me, it's like a real mindset change. I found it easier earlier in the hobby because I remember being like that.
Being like that, yeah. Yeah, and then there's the, like, but I'm assuming if someone's like, oh, I don't understand that, you don't get upset or get,
sure,
you know?
Yeah.
Where if I've definitely come across people who are like, someone's like, oh, I don't know, what's deck building mean? And they're like, what?
Yeah.
Like you know, which, again,
not great.
Not great.
Not great.
Yeah. So, music?
Bits.
This is our All the Bits. Bit. Our All the Bits bit, where we discuss some various board game bits and what we think of them. So not necessarily a review, but just, well, not a review of the game, but maybe a little kind of recap or review of the bits. In the box. Or in my case, the bag, as I'm going to talk about tonight.
Okay.
I'm going to get back to my old school ways of skirting the issues. I did at the beginning of our podcast when I would talk about, like, components and things. I want to talk about board game transportation receptacles.
Okay, receptacles.
That's what I want to talk about.
That sounds very official.
Yeah. And mostly various board game bags, because I had an incident on the weekend where I was going to a board game night, and again, it was where I played Antidote, so obviously there weren't going to be a ton of games there, so I had my giant IKEA bag, which is fairly popular amongst board gamers, and I filled it up with games, and I had a lot, I had like 7 or 8 games in there, so I had a bunch of games in there, and I get out of my car, and I'm like, okay, I'm carrying it, and then it just kind of like splits, and they're really kind of, you know, they're decent quality, those IKEA bags.
Yeah.
But it just kind of split in like 4 or 5 games just tumbled into the snow. Because we have tons of snow here. So they tumbled into the snow. The game survived, everyone. They're okay. There's no damage. There's like, one of them has some water damage, but the rest, you can't even tell.
Okay,
anything
good.
Happened. So yay for that. But that kind of got me thinking that I probably need something better to do this. Initially, I had a rolly cart thing that I used for it, but the wheels were horrible and like broke right away. And so there goes that. So I was kind of doing some research on this, and I found, you know who Scott Nicholson is?
Mm-hmm.
So I found...
Oh, I watched that video.
Yeah, did you? The board game bag ones?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Bort, if you go to YouTube, and I'll post the link below, there's Scott Nicholson, who I believe is a professor at...
McGill?
No. Not McMaster, I think.
Okay.
One of the Ontario universities here. He's American, but he moved there. I think he had a podcast or something.
Yeah,
for
he
forever.
Started. I think he was like one of the first board game reviewers. Video,
definitely.
Video
and I've heard him quite a few times on board games. He's gone there, and him and the other hosts there are just way too smart, and they just talk, and you're like, wow, I'm stupid. but yeah, so he teaches like a board game design class or something, or he's a prof at one of the Canadian.
And he's designed games as well.
Yeah. So he has this video, this 30-minute video, where he talks about a bunch of different board game bags. And the reason I went to this is because I came across the Game Hall bag. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, this might be a really good thing for me to get.
Yeah.
So I went and I was looking for reviews, and I came across this, and ooh, he's not just talking about that. He's talking about all these other bags. So it was a great video, and it's totally informative. And what I found out on this bag was that basically the Game Hall bag, which is a branded whatever thing, is basically just a musical instrument bag. I think it's, what is it? You're a musician person. Cajon or something, or cajon, or something Brazilian.
I think it's percussion, right?
Yeah,
so
it's something Brazilian.
I don't know percussion
but
brands.
Basically, it's like a drum type thing.
Yeah.
I think, right?
Yeah.
So that's all it really is. So he's like, well, if you go and you look, you can find this considerably cheaper. It's not branded. So I went on Amazon, and there was one for like $22 on there. So it's pretty much, and all the reviews aren't for the instrument. They're all from people who bought it for board games.
Yeah, that's
so there's
hilarious.
Tons of pictures on there. So I went ahead and ordered that. So I will let you guys know how that works out. It should be here like tomorrow or the
That's
day
exciting.
After.
And it has backpack straps?
Yeah, it has backpack straps cool. too. Yeah, and for like $20-$22. And I mean, I do take my games to a lot of places, and I'm constant. And for me, what's important for me too is I constantly have games in the car. I live in my car, so I'm like constantly in my car. And at the end of the day, or like when I have games in my car that I've gone to a board game night, I usually don't bring them in the house because it's pitch black when I get home, and there aren't very many lights. There's not a ton of lights on my streets. I'm like, I don't want to be fumbling through my car to get the games. So I think it's really important that I have something with padding that can really look after them too. Because I was cut off on my way home from said board game night, and they were packed in the IKEA bag, and everything just went flying all over the car. So I'm excited to try this, but he also goes through like canvas bags.
Yeah, he goes through everything
and rollers and those like crate things that like you can put under a bed that are fold up of things. So I'll have the link there. I definitely, if you haven't seen this video, totally watch it. And he's super entertaining. His videos are usually pretty good too.
Yeah, it's good.
So yeah, that's my all the bit about board game bags.
Cool. Yeah. I have a Tupperware bag. My mom used to sell Tupperware, so I have like this old Tupperware bag.
Yeah.
It works pretty good, but I'm tempted.
I'm not a huge fan of the Tupperware. It's just I know lots of people do, and I did go through a point where I did do the Tupperware. It's just
a Tupperware bag.
Oh,
my brown bag.
Oh, the brown bag. Yes.
That was like for.
But lots of people do
Tupperware.
Those big Tupperware.
Yeah. The bins.
The Rubbermaid bins.
Yeah.
And I just find those too cumbersome, and I'm not a huge fan. They take up so much space.
Well, and when it snows and rains, that's. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my all the bits bit this week is Magic Maze. I've talked about Magic Maze on the podcast before, but it's by Casper Lapp, published by Sit Down Games in 2017, 7.4 rating. And the bit I want to talk about is the say or do something bit. So this, just quickly about the game, it's a co-op game where you're not allowed to talk, and you're trying to move these pawns out of this mall, and it's chaotic, and you can't talk. So there's this huge wooden red pawn that you can put in front of someone to basically tell them to do something. It's called the do something pawn. And first of all, I appreciate that it's large and red. Like, how aggressive is that?
Yeah.
And I just think it's one of the most hilarious board game bits out there, just because it's so aggressive. Like, for a game where you're cooperating and you can't talk, there's like this, it's like very, very aggressive pawn. And when I've played this game, you know, people just like slam it repeatedly in front of, you know, other people. I've seen t-shirts and mugs that have the
Really?
Something with the pawn slamming down. So it's definitely, cool. I'm not the only one who thinks it's, you know, aggressive and also hilarious at the same time. So yeah, I played it last night, Magic Maze, and I was like, you know what? This is a good bit. It's a pretty funny bit.
Let's talk about this bit.
Yeah, so that's that.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Batter up.
Next up. Let's hit some home runs, Michelle.
Let's do it. Let's get some two holes in there. So this bit.
Yeah. What is about this bit? What's this bit about?
Games.
The Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, it's about baseball.
Is it? Let's discuss baseball.
No, let's not.
Who's your favorite
New
Year? Did you hear Aaron Judge won the Rookie of the Year?
I did. I was all over that. I tweeted it.
Did you see my tweet? We did. Yes, we started to do. The Blue Jays might trade Josh Donaldson. That's very sad.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah. Okay. Sad.
So yeah, this bit is about board games, not baseball.
And things we're looking forward to in the board game world.
So either like games that we're looking forward to playing or games that we're looking forward to buying or releasing.
You know what my number one next up was going to be for this episode?
Pandemic Legacy Season 1.
Listen, that joke is played out.
Is it though?
No, it's not.
Do you know what joke is played out? What?
The baseball one. The two-hole thing is played. Maybe we should try and think of something else.
We're not that good.
No, we're not. No. My number one thing was hopefully going to be BGG Con.
I really want
to go to BGG Con, but that didn't work out.
Oh.
So sad, Panda.
That's sad.
So, yeah.
That would be great.
That would have been super fun.
You haven't gone, right?
I have not been to BGG Con. I had my ticket, and I worked out a hotel room, but I had promised myself and my wife that I would only go if I could use points to get there, that I wouldn't actually spend money. And I could not. I was trying so hard. I should have taken care of this like a long time ago. But I was trying so hard to find flights that to make it work with points.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to convert this point to this point to this point to this point to fly on this airline and to do this. And I just couldn't make it work to get it. So,
too bad.
Yeah, there will be another time. So that is not my number one bit. But I sold my ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a large, not large sum, what I paid for it, of PayPal money, which I will invest in board games.
I invest my money in board games.
So this will help my next up thing.
Perfect.
And one of those games I'm hoping to get is Ex Libris.
Yeah?
Yeah. From Renegade Games and designed by Adam McIver. And I feel like I should talk about the art, and I will look up her name. Jackie something.
Okay, I'll look that up.
You can look it up, because the art is awesome in this game. This is obviously a new game from 2017. Right now it's got 7.4 on BGG. I have played Ex Libris. I've played it a couple times now. And I mentioned spilling beer all over poor Stephanie's copy at Gen Con.
Worst.
But I did have the opportunity to play it on Friday. And remembered how much I actually loved it and how great it was. I had a blast with it, and I definitely think it's a game that my wife would enjoy.
Okay.
Which is good, which will help.
Always good.
Which will help. And two, one of the ladies I played it with is an actual librarian, and she loved the game. She was like, oh, this is super cool, and like she was totally into it, which is my good friend's wife is a librarian, so I might buy them a copy of this as well, which helps too. But it's a worker placement game where you basically have two actions in the game, and that is to draw a card and to shelve a card, and you're building a structurally sound bookshelf is what you're doing throughout the game. And it's worker placement in that there are a whole bunch of different spots you can go to, and they all let you do some combination of those two actions, which is either drawing a card or shelving a card in your bookshelf in various manners. We've talked about the bits in this game before, but there are 12 awesome bits in it, including the gelatinous cube, which is just a blob. So the bits are really cool in this too, but it's for a game that's like over in an hour has a lot of thinky moments in it, which is really cool, which is right in my wheelhouse, like an hour. And that's like, you know, probably like light to medium, you know, on the medium, more medium side of the light, but whatever. It's more of like a medium weight type game. The art is fantastic, like I said. The one thing I was worried about initially And I didn't really remember this from Gen Con, maybe because it was all the hotness there, and I know some of the hotness has kind of died out. It's kind of fizzled away. But was the writing on the cards?
Yeah.
Because it's so vibrant and colorful, the game, all the writing is in white, so it washes out on a lot of cards.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people make that complaint.
It didn't seem to bother any of us
okay.
when we were playing, like the four of us. Obviously, I was the only one who had played it before, and I refreshed myself with it. It didn't really bother a ton because once you kind of read them through and you grasp them, you know them.
It's but the type they change every round. Don't
they do change, but it's the type of game like if you play it like a handful of times, you're gonna know all the
okay.
all the spaces. So it's not gonna be a huge issue. And honestly, it's nothing printing off a one page BGG synopsis right. of each space would do. Which I mean, probably in 50% of my games, I have some sort of printout
yes.
from BGG.
Yes.
So. What does it matter if I have a one page from this one that I just referred to? Or one player aid for each person? It's not the end of the world, I don't yeah. think. So, I'm definitely looking forward to yeah, actually owning this.
I want to try it. Yeah. It says it's best at two, which is interesting.
Yeah, I haven't played it at two. So, I don't good. Know. Yeah.
I want to try it. So, the artists are Jackie Davis, Adam
Jackie
McIver.
Jackie Davis is who I was. Yes, I know he's done some art.
And Anita Osborne.
I think Jackie Davis did a lot of it. Because I just picked up Perlock Holmes.
Oh, you did?
Which she does the art for, too, and it's kind of similar.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. It is. It looks beautiful.
So, yeah, that's actually great. So I'm definitely looking forward to getting my own copy of it.
Sweet. My first base, now I got to try to remember. Oh, my God, I'm getting tired.
Riverboat.
So it's Riverboat.
By one half of K-squared.
Yeah, I seem to be on a Kiesling kick.
Yeah.
So it's by Michael Kiesling. It's coming out in 2017, apparently. It's got a current rating of 7.7, which... Mm-hmm.
For, like, a brand new
it's
game.
It's not even out yet, so okay.
yeah.
And it's being published by Mayfair Games.
Mm-hmm.
And let me just pull it up on BGG, because I looked it up earlier, and I've not...
Boring Euro.
I do not remember. Yeah. It's a dry Euro.
Yeah. But it's about riverboats, which is pretty cool. I have a thing for riverboats, so...
Okay. Pretty cool. That's interesting.
Yeah, Yeah.
So it looks like a heavier game, weight of 3.25 or medium weight,
yeah.
90 minutes playing time. It's got card drafting and tile placement.
Mm-hmm.
And what I thought was interesting when I read this description is that you draft phase cards, and then that's how the order that the actions are taken mm-hmm. in. So I thought that was kind of interesting. You're harvesting crops, you're loading resources, mm-hmm. you're selling resources. yeah. So,
nostalgia.
Yeah, pretty much. I thought, yeah, I think that the drafting of it is kind of what makes it a little bit unique. And I've heard, there's not a lot out there in terms yeah. of like reviews or anything, but the little bit I've heard it has been really positive. And I don't know, I like Kiesling.
You do?
And
Kramer, you know, not so much?
Yeah, both. Sure. Yeah. But I'm pretty excited about this one. I did pre-order it.
Did you?
I did.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you know when it comes
and
out?
And the artist is Clemens Franz.
Oh, see, Clemens Franz, I love.
I love.
And look, it's greenish.
Yeah.
It's kind of greenish hue.
It looks very Euro-like. Yeah. Yes.
But it's about, is it about like, what's, is the theme about like on the Mississippi or something?
It just says like workers in the fields. Oh yeah, Mississippi River.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
You need to organize your workers to make sure things are ordered and harvested
yep.
and shipped.
Yep.
Yep.
So that sounds fun.
Yep.
I'll play your copy. I actually did have this on my short list of S and things
did that you?
I was interested in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, just because of the theme, really. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay, though.
Funny. Yeah, whatever. We'll speaking of Kramer, my net. No.
No. Speaking of dry euros,
New Sport is on my next stop from Uve. Damn it.
I don't know why you have so much
time for
that.
It's that W. Uve Rosenberg from Lookout / Mayfair Games, I guess.
Yeah.
That's obviously coming out. And it's right now 7. Like we talked about, 7.6 on BGG. So. This is his big box game, I guess, for this year.
Yep. That is correct.
But it seems a lot less biggie than his previous big box games, which is nice.
Less biggie.
Like, less, yes. like it's no Feast for Odin.
I've heard it compared in size to Glass Road.
Which is my favorite.
I got my rid favorite. Of my, I sold
oh,
Glass
I love
Road.
Glass Road.
No, I stole
Pawn Stars. Yeah, my favorite Glass Road. And I watched a couple reviews of it, and it's got me super excited about it. So it's got your, like, it's set, like, in a Viking village or something, I don't know. But it has a stock mechanism, which she's never really done before, at least from what I understand. And you're doing all your typical Uwe stuff, but you're, I got it right, but you're doing it in a much smaller package, much like Glass Road. So I think the game plays in like an hour or a bit over an hour.
Okay.
It seems like really straightforward and like really, it's again, having taught Feast of Odin to a few people now, I'm actually looking forward to that too. And yes, you buy like stocks in like fishing companies or some such thing like that.
Yes.
Which and seems really, again, really, people. I mean, much like you with Oracle of Delphi, you know, it's something a designer's done that, something the designer's doing that he or she hasn't really done before. Mm-hmm. And I think this is something that he's never really done before. So, and I think Glass Road was kind of like that too. So I'm definitely looking forward to, yeah, to playing this one, because I think it'll be a nice, nice change of pace.
Do you know if, Inland Port came out before Glass Road? Because they kind of have a similar, like, that wheel feels somewhat similar. Yeah,
I can look it up. I don't know. I would assume after, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Nusfjord.
Nusfjord. I have it pre-ordered.
Yeah?
No, I don't.
Oh.
Obviously not.
I've heard Mayfair's having some issues.
Are they? Yeah. Like financial?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think that's what I heard. Really? I feel like I'm too tired right now to do it.
Okay, let's get this over
with
then.
I've got to check.
Oh, you're going to check about Mayfair?
I know, I just looked it up. I couldn't find it.
What would you do?
I could have sworn I heard that.
I don't know. Maybe. It's very possible.
Okay, my next one.
What's your next one?
My two hole is...
You notice how I didn't even say two hole?
I know.
When I did that, so...
I have to. I feel like it's, you know... Part of our tradition.
Also, you notice this episode, I haven't complained I'm tired. It's been you.
It's true.
I know.
I am tired.
What's up with that?
I don't know. It's been busy. Anyway. Sorry. That's probably annoying.
I'm just... frustrated and very
yeah
I'm starting to calm down now, so we'll start over after and re-record.
No,
this is you. People at home will not hear any of this. They won't hear any of it anyway because our audio sucks. But you won't hear anything anymore, so
all right. Well, anyways.
Okay, what how's your two hole doing?
It's doing pretty good because it's Pandemic Legacy season 2.
Oh, nice. Oh, you got two in the two hole.
I got two in the two hole. Wow.
Bang.
Yeah,
I'm on the roll.
It's Rob Davio, Matt Leacock, Z-Man Games, 2017. Current rating of 8.9.
Yeah. They'll probably stay very close to that.
I would imagine so. I am in February, heading into March on this game. I was pandemicked out. I am no longer pandemicked out. This game is fabulous. It feels different enough from the first season. Absolutely.
Cool.
We're having a blast with it, and I cannot wait to play more of it.
Cool. Are you playing it at 4?
No, yes, we play two player, Rich and I play, and then we both take two characters, because I've heard it's very easy at two, so we've played season one with four characters, and we're playing this one with four characters as well.
Gotcha. Yeah.
It's fabulous. Cool. I really am enjoying it.
It's not that good. It's six, overall ranking is 619.
Oh, it'll get up there.
I know.
It'll get up. I'm curious if it'll overtake or surpass season one, like if it'll be number one.
We'll probably find out.
Yeah.
Curious. I know there's probably not a ton you can really say about it right now.
No, there's not.
We should
just do that it's fabulous. Yeah. It's really good.
We should do a spoiler cast.
Okay.
And you can talk about it.
But you're going to play
by it. By the time I play it, come on.
No.
Let's be realistic.
You have to play it, Sean.
I will play it, but by the time I play it, I will not remember anything. So.
Yeah, that's true.
So don't worry about that. But I think it'd be fun. Or we can get some like other people who've played it to join us, and I can go hide in the corner.
Yes,
I'll go play Terraforming Mars in the corner by myself solo. That's true. Okay, so my final next up isn't really a game per se.
You're just cheating this episode.
I know. I'm on a roll. Listen, it's what we're looking forward to in the board game world.
Okay.
Okay, so it's the BGG Secret Santa. This will be a lot more helpful if we record this before the deadline, but. But the BGG Secret Santa deadline was like yesterday or the day before. This has been one of my favorite things that I do in board games.
Really?
Every year. I love it. It's so much fun. So the BGG Secret Santa and I'll tell you guys how, if you are interested, how you can get involved in something similar, actually. It's kind of cheating, but you can still do it. But what this is everyone, they have like thousands of people. I don't know how many people do it. They set up a Santa account, and everyone's given a target. And that person could be anywhere. You put, when you register, you put where you're willing to ship.
Okay.
So, like, I put Canada and the U.S. And you basically just go through a vendor, and you're not shipping the games. Like, I'll go on to, like, Fun Again Games or wherever, or Board Game Bliss, and send it to the person from there. And you have to do, I think it's 50 with the game and with shipping, it's like you have to spend at least $50 on the person. But you go through their wish list. You have to have an up-to-date wish list. And what's neat about this is you're not really going to get a game you don't want. So you're just not choosing it per se. But if you know, 1 year the person had like 8 games on the wish list. And they made it very clear in my interact, because you interact with them. There's this one Santa account, and you go onto Santa account, and you send them a geek mail. And you, some people get really into it. Like, you can get super into it, and like,
I've heard
really,
Blue Pig, Pink Pig.
Yeah, like, yeah, you can get into it. Like, I don't get a ton. Like, I like try and rhyme and do stuff. I don't get, like, when I do it, I don't do a ton because I'm not that creative. But like, my Secret Santa last year was from France. And he started like apologizing for his English, and I was like, "Oh, you're from France. I'm from Quebec." And then we started talking French and like doing,
oh, nice.
And like, so you post your responses to Santa on your BGG profile. So that's how they do it, because everyone uses this one account. And like last year, I got Adrenaline, which I wanted, and I got an expansion for Imperial Settlers and a couple boxes of Rory Story Cubes. So it was all stuff that I wanted, that I had on my wish list. And the stuff you like really want, you put like, you write little blurbs about if you want. So to really hammer it home in your conversations with Santa. My first year that I did it, I got absolutely nothing. My Santa didn't say anything to me at all.
Oh.
Yeah. He was like, just the only message I got from my Santa was, what vendor would you like me to buy from?
Oh, really?
I was like, okay, here, Board Game Bliss, go to this website. That was it. I got nothing. My one last year was like constantly fishing for information, which was fun. And I do that too. And I know there's some stories out there with people who do it. I know a listener of ours and friend of ours, Jacqueline, has met her Secret Santa in like the Netherlands or something,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, so there's definitely stories out there of people who really get into it, and some people just go above and beyond. It's definitely a fun experience. I love it. If you are interested and you haven't done it, I know like a few of the guilds for like other podcasts and things do their own Secret Santa. I know Heavy Cardboard does one.
Okay.
And I believe it's December 1st. Brawling Brothers is another podcast I think does one. So you can easily go get involved in those if you're still interested, because I looked before and they haven't passed their deadlines yet. So if it's something you're interested in, I totally recommend it. It's a super fun experience. So, yeah.
Cool.
And so what's your final next?
The third, cherry on top?
Your cherry on top. That's
not
baseball term.
My third.
What's
my
your
third
umpire?
Base.
I don't know. Just go.
Happy Pigs! Happy Pigs! This is by Kuroki Mura, published by Yellow in 2013, and has a current rating of 6.98.
Okay.
This is what I've heard. I haven't played it yet, which is why it's on my next up, because I'm really excited to play it. What I've heard it is a slightly heavy or medium weight economic game disguised
as a kid's game. As a child's game.
Because the art is so cute. It's little pigs, and then I bought the farm expansion, so I have like cows and ducks, and oh my god, it's really cute art. And it's an economic game. You're breeding animals, you're growing animals, you're vaccinating them, like, you know, and there's a little bit of push your luck, like broom service, where you pick a tile that you want to do an action, and then everybody reveals, and if other people want to do the same action you do, you get to do it less times than if you were the only one who picked it. It just looks like a really fun game, and I'm really excited to get it to the table. It's cute.
Do you have it yet?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I do.
We should play it on Friday or Saturday or whatever.
Okay. Sounds
I wouldn't mind
good.
Playing that.
Yeah, it looks fun.
Yeah.
And great art, which always helps.
That's true. Yes. I'm trying to think of, there's, I think, a similar portal.
Yeah,
one.
I looked it up. Happy Farm.
Happy Farm. There you go. That's like, So
similar.
That's cool. That's neat. I like when companies do that.
Yeah.
It's different. Yeah. It's like Bunny Kingdom.
Yeah, that's a great game too.
That's all of our next stops.
That is.
We made it through double digits.
We did. Thank you so much for listening.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for staying with us.
Yes, and our subscribing numbers are trickling up. Slowly, a little bit, so thank you. We appreciate that.
Yes.
Through all of our audio issues, which we promise we will figure out.
We are working on
yes.
it. We assure you that.
Yes.
And feel free to interact with us. Feedback, yes. stories, yeah. ideas, all of that. Yeah. We're at allthebitspod.
Yeah.
On Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah.
And you can also email us at allthebitspodcast@gmail.com.
Okay. And yeah, I don't have anything else to say.
Until next time.
And until next time, we'll see you for episode 11 in a couple of weeks.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.